We'll come to order. I'm joined today by Senator Dyson, Stedman, Wilkin, Co-Chair Wilkin, and myself, Senator Bundy. And today we'll begin the, continue the overview of the capital budget request. And any announcements or questions from anyone?
No.
First on our, looks like first up is education.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, my name is Karen Rayfeld. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Education. With me this morning is Diane Behrens, our Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. We'll go through our items before you and the Governor's capital budget.
Karen, I think you need to pull that mic towards you and kind of speak into. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, our requests begin on page 4 of the bill. The first 20 items are requests for funding for major maintenance projects on the Department of Education's prioritized list. This will fund the first 20 out of 71 major maintenance projects, totaling $28.4 million. There are individual project descriptions, I believe, in your backup. I don't know if you would like me to go through those project by project or if there are specific questions about individual projects, but that does take you down to page 6, line 12.
Does anyone want to go through the individual projects and hear what those are, description, or do you have any questions about any of the particular projects? They're statewide, various, and I think we would always have all the general questions of what happened and why wasn't maintenance done. And
absolutely, and those are in, like I said, they are in your, you should have backup. We do have, of course, the project applications at the department if you're interested in more detail on those, and we have information posted on our website as well. But this is our annual list that we bring to you. The next project then will be for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and Diane Behrens will speak to that.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And the Commission requests two capital projects for this year, totaling $457,900 of corporation receipts. The first project is the interactive voice response system. As noted in the summary information, this IVR application supports approximately 8,000 calls per month into our servicing center. This is a service that is available 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. Were the IVR to fail, the current IVR is about 7.5 years old, and it simply isn't capable of providing the functionality that we have, and it becomes increasingly difficult to support given its age. If the IVR were to fail, not only would we need additional staff positions to handle the calls that are currently handled through the automated response system, but we would have a diminishment of service to customers because it is not financially feasible to staff our call center 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Any questions about the voice response? Is that primarily explain this to me a little better. What does it actually do?
Madam Chair, if you were to call, if you were a customer and you were to call into our 800 number, you would have a series of options if you wanted to access your account using the automated system. So if you were to call after hours, would want to know if a recent payment had been received, what your current balance was, what the next payment due was. That information would be available after you keyed in certain security information to ensure that it was your account that you were accessing.
So it's essentially 24-hour a day around the, you know, throughout the week for retrieve information about your own account.
That's correct.
And is that something that you use exclusively, or is this a system that can be shared, or is it?
Madam Chair, the It's my understanding that ETS has looked at whether or not an enterprise approach could be used, and they have determined that an enterprise approach, and whether that's surveying the different entities that have this type of software need, if the needs were so different, the functionality was so different, I'm not sure what their reasons were, but they've, after that analysis, they've indicated to the individual agencies that use this type of technology that they need to proceed on their own.
Any questions about the voice? Okay. Next item.
The second item is part of the agency's ongoing need to maintain current status of software and PC infrastructure. As you know, there are both departmental and statewide technology standards, and these funds, which total $291,900, would be used to upgrade our local area networks and PC infrastructure. I would point out that this is not simply a case of keeping up with sort of subjective standards set by the state. A failure to upgrade our ACPE systems would put us at risk for data loss due to virus or system failure.
Are there any questions? Diane, thank you. Simon.
Madam Chair, the final request from the Department of Education that's before you this morning is $1.4 million for the preliminary design for the museum, archives, and library building expansion. As the committee may know, a few years ago we purchased the land adjacent to the Alaska State Museum for the expansion project, which is designed to be a combined facility for libraries, archives, and museums. The total project is estimated to be about a $40 million project. There will be obviously a number of partners that will be necessary to fund the construction of the building when we get to that phase of the project. This is for preliminary design and planning of that facility.
Okay, now, refresh my memory, when was that property?
Madam Chair, I think it was about 3 years ago. It was $1.5 million that the legislature provided for us to purchase that lot adjacent to the museum. So that was purchased. It is available for the project, and now we're trying to go to the design work. We have the last 2 years, if not three, requested through our congressional delegation some construction funding for at least a portion of the project. We've not been successful with that as yet. We believe that if we get some design work done on the building and we have an actual project to take out to a number of partners, some of our private foundations, the federal government, and the state, that it will take a number of entities to actually construct the building. This request, though, is for the preliminary design and planning for that expanding facility.
And what is the timeline? That's out of ordinance. That you've got. This is preliminary design, and then.
That's correct, Madam Chair. The timeline, of course, will be dependent on when we are able to secure the design funds, and then how quickly we could actually move to get some funding partners for the project. The longer you delay in actually constructing the project once it's designed, has impact, of course, to the cost and what you're able to do, but. Really, the first step here is to try to get our design together so that we can seek some construction dollars for it.
Any questions? Senator Hoffman.
Yes, so what are the funding partners and what's the anticipated contributions of those partners?
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, at this point, I don't have a list of partners for you. I do know that the Museums Alaska and the State Library Association have been very active in promoting this project and talking to various foundations such as Rasmussen, and they've talked to obviously our congressional delegation about being a partner. But until they really get a design that they can take to people and show them what we're going to be doing and asking for their support, we don't have a list of partners or the amount that they're willing to contribute.
Would you would you anticipate that the state of Alaska would be the major partner?
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't know if the state of Alaska would be the major partner. We would hope that the state would support with at least a portion of those funds. Any other questions? Thank you. Do you have other items? Fishing game? Morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Lawson, Admin Services Director of Fish and Game. We have a number of items in the capital budget, starting with the first one. Deferred maintenance facilities. We're asking for $400,000 in bond funds. This project basically is an annual request and provides for the repair, maintenance, and renovation of the various facilities we have all over the state. We have employees in 40 different spots, and we have bunk houses, offices, warehouses, cabins, labs, airport hangars, and this is just the annual maintenance request.
Okay. Thank you. Next item.
Okay, the next item is the Fairbanks infrastructure renewal and replacement upgrades. This is for $200,000 of bond funds. This project is to replace or upgrade existing systems in our regional office complex in Fairbanks. It's the Creamer's Field complex. The most critical need we have is to hook up this complex to the city sewer system. Right now it's under a septic system. In 1998 we basically doubled the size of the complex, and because city sewer wasn't in the area, we basically stuck with a septic system. That system is failing, so we need to hook up to city sewer. And if there is any funding left, we have a few minor projects that we need to fix.
Okay, and when you refer to bond funds, what are you referring to?
I think that's part of the OMB bond package that a number of capital projects are funded out of. And I don't know if there's anyone from OMB that can speak to that, but it's part of that whole capital project funding.
Would that be Amarada Hess bonds?
I think so.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, the next item is vessel and aircraft repair and maintenance. This is for $278,500, again, bond funds. This project will provide for funding for the maintenance of the of Fish and Game's research vessels and aircraft. Basically, we use these vessels and aircraft to monitor the fisheries, and basically it's just to do the annual maintenance on those items.
Any questions on that? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I don't want to take a lot of time
here
now, but I'd enjoy seeing a list of the major maintenance on the vessels.
Okay, I can
and
get
one of these vessels, the one that where we had a warranty problem on the wrong kind of aluminum in the hull, that was being replaced by the manufacturer, the construction for that?
I'm not sure, but I'll get that information to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I look at this, I guess one of the questions that I have is what kind of aircraft are being used by Fish and Game for their activities out there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, as I understand it, there's a bunch of different ones from Cessnas to Beavers and that kind of thing. If you want a list, I can get you that. Would you like that?
I very much would. And is there a cooperative effort between public safety and the use of the hangars that we see in the first request, as well as in the aircraft that are under the other departments?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, as I understand it, we have our own staff that does the maintenance and that. I'd have to get back to you on that.
My question, if I
yes,
could, my question is not for maintenance. My question is for the hangar.
Okay. I don't know, sir.
Hangar just for storage, right. Obviously. I like to be kept inside as well. So I can understand the airplane standpoint, so I just want to know if there's a cooperative effort between the two departments to make sure the aircraft don't deteriorate farther, being at the mercy of the elements.
Okay.
I see one of them is out in Kodiak, and that's, I mean, obviously the weather out there is fairly harsh. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, I was looking at the last 3 years of funding, 300, 150, and 150. The new ship that, it's coming online, the one that was dropped, did that replace a current vessel, or is that an addition to the fleet? And
I'm going to ask someone to come up who hopefully can answer yours and maybe some of the other questions.
And I guess my question is, two, does that show a savings in the 06 budget? And two, what is the status of the vessel that was dropped?
Madam Chair, my name is Sharon Bruce. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Commercial Fisheries. Senator Wilkins, the new vessel does replace a vessel. The FV Montague was replaced by the FV Solstice, and the Montague has been sold, I believe.
Does the budget then reflect the savings of a new vessel coming online?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkins, I don't know if there is any savings that has been identified. The reason the Montague was replaced is there were some questions regarding its seaworthiness, its stability. It was an older vessel. It was not suitable for the task that it was being used for. And so essentially it was an upgrade to a more seaworthy, more capable platform.
What's the status of is that the name of the vessel, the new one that was dropped, the Solstice?
The Solstice.
What's the status of it?
It is in operation, and it is in Prince William Sound. And it's scheduled for some maintenance from this CIP. So I can tell you it's due to go into the shipyard to have some electrical work and some hydraulic work done to it.
As a result of the accident?
No, not as a result of the accident, I don't think.
What's the name of the ship that was dropped when it was being loaded?
I'm not aware of that.
Oh.
It's probably the Solstice, but I'm not aware if these particular repairs are as a result of it being dropped. I don't believe they are, considering it's electrical and hydraulics, that they probably weren't associated with that. But I'll get back to you on that. Okay. One of us will get back to you with additional information.
So I guess my question is, it was dropped, the manufacturer, whoever, made some repairs on it. Is it now in service?
I believe it is in service, yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. And the state won't have any sort of expense due to the accident?
I'm not aware of any, but again, I'll double check on you on that and get back to you
if there is any. We'll just keep an eye on that. So, okay, thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Chair, I'm just kind of curious, point education on my part, I guess. It appears that this is ongoing maintenance, just boat haul outs and so on and so forth. And I'm just curious why this isn't built into the operating budget. It seems like it's a reoccurring expense year after year. Why is it in a capital project versus standard operations?
Well, to the Chair, Senator Stedman, it's always, as far as I'm aware, been a capital item, and most of the expenditure is actually contractual. It goes into a shipyard, with the exception of the aircraft, that we only have four aircraft in Kodiak that service the Alaska Peninsula, and we do have a pilot mechanic there that does some of the work in shop, and that is in-house. But the most of the work on the vessels, because of the size of the vessels, is done through a shipyard, an outside shipyard. So I think that is the reason why it's considered a capital item.
Does that answer you?
Yes.
Any further questions on this item? Go ahead.
Okay, the next item is the Didson Sonar equipment purchase. This is a $500,000 request. Again, the bonding funds would be the source. This project is would provide funding to the Division of Commercial Fisheries to purchase 5 Didson sonar units, and these units would be used to count migrating salmon on a number of rivers within the central AYK and westward regions. The cost of each unit is about $100,000. That's why we need $500,000. We used the sonar to as a tool to estimate salmon abundance in many of the rivers. Accurate and timely estimates of spawning salmon are very important in terms of making management decisions so that we can have the maximum sustainable harvest.
Any questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a technical question. Are these sonar units any more reliable as far as giving accurate numbers than the ones that were there a couple of years ago when there was such a disparity between the fish that actually got up the river as opposed to those that were down at the mouth? And I don't remember where it was, but I just remember it being such a big issue that it closed the fisheries down in the lower part, St. Mary's and Mountain Village and lower, because of some sonar unit that was either unreliable or gave inaccurate information. Are these the same kind?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no, they're not. They are an improved sonar. They're a newly developed technology that offers improved accuracy, improved precision, and also it has the ability to give directional information about the target, whether it's going upriver or downriver, that kind of thing. Also, these units are easier to install, and the data that they provide is easier to interpret. Is, you know, the staff that operate these units are technicians primarily, not specialists in sonar, but they are technicians working for the department, seasonal employees typically. So training and ease of operation and ease of interpretation of the data are important issues, and these Didson sonars offer improvements in all those respects. In addition, the sonars that they were replacing are older sonars, and in some cases, there are sonars that are no longer manufactured, and even the maintenance on them is being phased out. So we have to replace them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the life of a sonar like this? How long would it be in the field in operation?
The Chair, Senator Wilkins. The Didsons, of course, we don't have any real experience with them yet. We are just beginning. But typically the sonars that we do have experience with, they have a long life. The ones that we're using in some locations in the state, in the Copper River and in other places, were initially installed in the late 1970s, early 1980s. So you're looking at 25 or 30 years. And the thing that confounds that a little bit, of course, is the rapid pace of technological advance and improvements.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And you answered that in the backup. I didn't see that. Thank you.
Are there other questions?
Just the last comment. Didson does have a good reputation as far as manufacturing quality equipment.
Thank you. Thank you.
Moving on, the next item, I'm not sure if it's in your packet or not, but it's in the governor's original budget bill, capital budget bill. We had a Chignik Weir, and we're not doing that. We actually withdrew that. So I'll go on to the next item, which is sport fish and recreational boating and non-boating access projects. This request totals $2 million. $1.5 million is in federal funding, and $500,000 is in fish and game funds. This project provides funds to the Division of Sport Fish to construct boating and sport fish access throughout the state. It's the Sport Fish Restoration Program, and it's a federal program, and 15% of the total amount of sport fish dollars that we receive has to be allocated for recreational boating access. If we don't use those federal funds for that purpose, then the state doesn't get them. This is an annual request to basically construct and upgrade boating and sport fish access, you know, facilities statewide. It's a 3-to-1 match, 3 being the feds and 1 being the state.
Is there a listing of those projects?
I can give you a listing, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask the same thing. I'd enjoy seeing a list of all the places you're considering building access ramps and kind of the criteria you go through to figure that out. And I think you're, Madam Chair, there's a controversial one, I believe, in your district that probably both of us are concerned about. Thank you.
Okay, we'll get that to you, Madam Chairman. The next item is the transient boat launch facility development match. It's is for $167,000 of fish and game funds. This request will provide funds to the Division of Sport Fish to match federal funds that were actually appropriated in FY03. This project provides transient moorage, you know, facilities for recreational boats of over 26 feet. We'll be working with the local communities to implement this.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Jackson.
I really would enjoy a list, same thing, which ones are under consideration and what the triage criteria okay. you all use in deciding those, and what, if any, local participation you ask for or require.
Through the Chair, Senator Dyson, it's my understanding that there's only two projects that are involved in this one. They're Pelican and Juneau, both in Southeast Alaska.
Okay. Still would enjoy the information. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chair. I assume that the other members of the committee will be copied with this information being requested, multiple items.
Okay, and yeah, anytime we've asked for the information, just be sure, this would be for all departments, that the information go to all members.
And then, Madam Chair, just as a point, Chair, as we struggle over the next few years dealing with harbor and mortgage fees and stuff, I'd also like some information put together on how these two facilities are going to be maintained and who's going to pay for it.
Maintenance. Good question. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the next project, National Coastal Wetlands Conservation Grant. This is also known as the Snyder Parcel. We're asking for $310,000 in federal receipts. The Snyder Parcel is 135 acres of undeveloped wetlands habitat on the Gustavus Forelands. The parcel is used by waterfowl and shorebirds and provides important habitat for sandhill cranes. It joins the Dude Creek critical habitat area, and that area is designated for the protection of sandhill crane habitat. Basically, the Nature Conservancy is acting as the agent for the state. They're going to put up $104,000. The federal funds would be $310,000. As I understand it, that the title then will be turned over to the state of Alaska.
Other questions? Senator Bundy.
Yes, thank you. And while this is critical habitat, would anything in this project preclude people from using the area, whether they be bird watchers or hunters?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Kelly Hepler. I'm the Director of the Division of Sport Fish. Senator Bundy, absolutely not. It's one of the primary criteria we want to use when we buy land is not to lock it up. And so it's not stated in here. Its importance for habitat, I think, is clear, but also its importance to make sure that people like you or myself have access to property forever. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's marked as a phased project new. Is that mismarked, or will we expect more of this in a future time?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkin, there's be another request coming in next year.
For the same area?
For the same area.
And what will that request, how many acres will that be?
Through the chair, Senator, I'm going to have to go back and check on that. I was talking to the Nature Conservancy yesterday, and I thought that question may come up, and I checked my email this morning, didn't have a response back to that, but I can certainly get the information to you today.
Maybe a map, Kelly?
Okay.
Just a,
you bet.
So we could see where it's located and what the expectation for the next piece is. Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
I'd like to just follow up with that. Looking at shorebirds and waterfowl, I think we can include all the coastal zone for the entire state of Alaska. So, yeah, I'd like more information on this particular issue, especially if we're going to get a request that's going to come in multiple years.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Thank you.
Okay, moving on, the next project is the Crystal Lake Hatchery Transformer Replacement. This is a $30,000 request, Fish and Game Funds. The transformer located at the Crystal Lake Hatchery was recently tested. There was more than one. They were recently tested and found it contained very high levels of PCB. Petersburg Power and Light is telling us that it's the state's responsibility to replace these, especially if a spill happens, the state would be liable. The estimated cost to replace the transformers is $30,000, and of course the estimated cost of cleaning up a transformer spill is much higher. Just a little bit of background, the state has actually had the Crystal Lake Hatchery operated under contract to the Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association since FY99, and there was an environmental audit done, and this was actually recognized. So basically, everyone's pointing fingers back to us to take care of this issue.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Department of Fish and Game often buy transformers. Why is it falling in your lap? I would think that the power company is the one that owns those transformers and it initially.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, it's an interesting question. I guess I thought the question was going to be, should it be our responsibility or Southern Southeast? And as far as ownership, I have to back up and check on that. I guess I relied on the fact that people were telling us it was our responsibility. I guess I accepted that because I don't want the reverse of having cleaned it up was worse for whoever's responsible. But I don't know, Tom, if you can help me out as far as responsibility as far as actually owns that transformer or not. I'll check on that.
Research that.
Yeah, good question.
Okay. Good question.
Well, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. There's a transformer in a pole near my home, but I don't feel I own that thing, and if I did, I'd charge the power company rent on it.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Next item.
Madam Chair, the next item is it's a language section. It's Section 5 in the capital budget, and this section has to do with the sale of the research vessels, and the estimated value of this is $212,700 of general fund program receipts. And basically, we have a pending sale of our research vessel, the Pandalus, and the proceeds are estimated to be up to $200,000. Previously, we sold the research vessel Montague, and the funds were actually appropriated back to Fish and Game to buy a new vessel. At that time, the language of that section limited the funds to just replace that former vessel and not for the repair and maintenance. So what we're basically asking, the way the language is written, is to use the proceeds from the sale of the Pandalus as well as the balance of about $12,700 of the previous sale to just repair and maintain the existing vessels. That's what that language section is.
Are there any questions about this item? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. How much did the Montague sell for?
I don't have that information in front of me.
Give me that information just so I have a reference as to what the value of these vessels are?
Sure.
Senator Stedman.
Just kind of a, I guess, a broader question concerning these vessels, Madam Chairman. Does the department periodically do an analysis to see if they should retain ownership, incurring the maintenance insurance and carrying costs, versus just going out from time to time and leasing vessels out of the industry to hold back the cost side? Is that done very often, or?
Would you repeat that again?
From time to time, does the department go in and look at the viability of continued ownership of particular vessels versus just leasing a vessel when they need to do research? And I'm just kind of curious how internally that is handled, or is once a vessel into the system, it basically stays in the system until such time that it becomes virtually dysfunctional.
To the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, that kind of examination is carried out. I wouldn't say it's carried out on a routine or, you know, regular basis, but it's carried out periodically. One of the things that makes it difficult to lease the vessel, a vessel, is availability of appropriate vessel. Oftentimes, we're using vessels at the time the commercial fisheries are going on, so the kind of vessels that we would typically go to are not available. In addition, these vessels are used for a wide range of things, from supporting commercial fishing management to supporting the remote camps that we have for weirs and sonars around the state, and in addition, research. So there are a number of complicating factors. We do definitely look at our opportunities to use private vessels on a contract basis, and we do quite a bit of contracting in addition to what we do with these vessels.
Senator Olson.
In light of the last question, I tend to agree that if you've got a smattering of reasons you need a vessel out there, if you buy one, you're pretty much restricted to that size of vessel. You're not going to be checking weirs up the river with something that's used to going into the ocean. So why is there not more leasing going on? That's more a question that's more in depth, but I guess how often do these reviews happen where you do look at ownership versus leasing? You just said it was a periodic thing. Is that like every 10 years or every year?
Chair Senator Olson. No, it's more often than every 10 years, and we've been going through such an examination just very recently. And in fact, that has led to the sale of the Pandalus, one of our vessels, and the consolidation of our operations into fewer vessels, and also looking at a greater utilization of leased vessels. One of the things to keep in mind, as you indicated, with the sort of the wide range geographically that these vessels have to cover, the vessels are located typically in different regions. The Resolution is in the Kodiak area. It's a vessel that's suited for operation in that area. It's a large vessel, so it can actually go out in open water. Some of the other vessels that operate, inside the inside waters of Southeast Alaska are somewhat smaller. And then for the rivers, in addition to these large vessels, we do have some skiffs and smaller vessels that we utilize in those situations. And we have just gone through a process of weeding out a number of vessels there and cutting the list down significantly. And we're about ready to go out with a surplus sale. The state is about ready to do a surplus sale on some of those. And those are vessels, these are very small vessels that would be very difficult to, they're boats, really.
And how many vessels are owned by the department?
There are five.
How many vessels are leased by the department?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I can't give you a list off the top of my head of the number of vessels that we lease in a year. I can get back to you with that information, but we own, the department owns five vessels.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other items? Any other items?
I have one other item.
Tom, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. We have one other item, and that is in the governor's office budget, and it's a large ticket item. In the governor's first version of the budget, it was $26 million. Now it's only $24 million. And it is the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. This project is for the receipt of federal funds from federal fiscal year 2005 for the fund. This funding is the sixth year that we've gotten this funding. The fund comes through the state, comes to the state through a memorandum of understanding between the governor's office and the U.S. Commerce Department. And in a memorandum of understanding, it designates Fish and Game as the program manager. As I said, this we've cut it back from 26 to 24 million. And the simple objective is to assure that Alaska salmon and the salmon fisheries are both, you know, sustainable and continue to provide jobs and income for the families of Alaska. There's no match required for that money.
Are there other questions? Thank you, Tom.
That's it, Madam Chair.
Office of the Governor.
Morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I am Linda Perez, Administrative Services Director for the Governor's Office. Our capital request, the first item, is $100,000 in bond funds for immediate maintenance needs at the Governor's House. Although there are a number of significant maintenance items required at the House, we currently have very significant leaks in the butler's pantry, the family room, and the master bedroom. We are hoping to identify the source of these leaks and get estimates on repair and utilize the $100,000 to do as much repair as possible.
Mm-hmm. I do think the committee should be aware that there's probably couple of million dollars worth of work needed to be done at the governor's mansion. And if you've been there, you can identify through the years that you've seen the differences and heard the items of concern there. And we aren't very good caretakers if we don't, you know, we often fuss and tend to make a problem about school districts that don't take care of their buildings. And we chide them for not doing that. And so, and we would be just as lax if we don't move forward to do something with this building that we've designated as the governor's house. And regardless of who's in office, it still needs to be in good shape for the future. And so, are there other comments?
You said that there was a couple million dollars worth of deferred maintenance that was, or maintenance required by the governor's mansion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is the governor's mansion? What is the value of the governor's mansion? I mean, is it?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Governor Stedman.
Not very high if you're not the governor.
No. Be careful.
I think that is one of the standout buildings that we have in the state of Alaska, and it'd be nice to maintain it. It is a very nice structure.
And it is recognized as a historically significant structure.
The point I was making was this is a very insignificant request for a very significant amount. So, go ahead, Linda.
Our second request is for the Division of Elections for an additional $992,500 from the election fund to complete the purchase of the accessible voting units for each precinct statewide and to accomplish the verifiable paper record modification required under House Bill 459. Those are the requirements under the Help America Vote Act that the division is implementing. The third request, I'm sorry.
Are there any questions on the voting equipment? Thank you. Go ahead.
The third request has already been addressed by Tom Lawson. And the final request is
That is indeed $24,000 instead of $26,000?
It is. We've put an amendment in for $24 million.
Okay. Very good. All right.
And then the final request is ADA request for $100,000 in general fund to go toward the statewide compliance projects. The 06 funds we're requesting would go towards the Meadow Creek Correctional Center project in Eagle River.
The last thing you said? What was the last sentence you said?
Oh, this year's funding request would go towards the Meadow Creek Correctional Center project.
Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you. Are there any questions about those four items? Thank you.
Thank you.
Department of Health and Social Service.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, Janet Clark with the Department of Health and Social Services. This morning, we're going to go over projects in the Department of Health and Social Services that are in both the regular capital bill and the mental health bill. So I hope that doesn't cause confusion, but we'll go over everything this morning. The first project is reference number 38900, $24,200,000 in certificate of participation receipts. This is for the Alaska Virology Lab, which is currently located in the Arctic Health Research Facility on the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus. This is to replace that facility. These receipts would need to be appropriated in an appropriation bill if either Senate Bill 73 or House Bill 100 passes. That is the authorizing language for the virology lab. The Finance Committee, I presume, will get a detailed overview when one of those bills comes to the committee. I know it's been before the Senate HES Committee already. So, Madam Chairman, what I'd like to do is leave a detailed explanation to Dr. Monsager when that bill comes to the committee, unless there are detailed questions about that project.
Are there any questions about the project?
We'll review that more carefully when it comes to it.
Again, this is just the appropriation of the receipts, and if the bill doesn't pass and the receipts are not valid.
Okay.
Yes. The next project is item 33683, $2.5 million. It is in the mental health bill, but it's on our list as our priority number two. These funds would be used to replace the current facilities that are in the enhanced crisis treatment services in Anchorage. The new facility will be built in the old API that is now owned by Providence Hospital. Madam Chairman, I did bring an old aerial photo with me just to liven up your morning. This is an aerial photo of the API campus, which is here, McLaughlin Youth Center, and the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Uh-huh.
I thought this would help at least explain what's going on. The facilities in question are the Crisis Treatment Center, which actually is the old superintendent's house for the old API. They used to have a house. We've now used this as a diversion to API, or actually when patients are released from API, it can also be a step-down placement for individuals who are not ready for the community. This is the new API that actually will be open this summer, and we'll invite you all. It is going to be a historic time in Alaska for a new facility. This building here is the old API.
Uh-huh.
When these facilities were first built, this whole property was state land. In the Mental Health Trust settlement, it was given to the Mental Health Trust Authority as part of that settlement, this whole property. The Mental Health Trust Authority, in the last few years, recently sold this part of the property, actually it kind of goes more like this, to Providence Hospital. And recently, Providence Hospital traded the top portion of this property to the university. There was a land exchange, and now the university owns the first part of this property. Providence owns this, and the rest of this property is now back in state hands with the agreement. What we're asking for is that these services are very critical. It's very important that they be located close to API because of their step-down nature, et cetera. The university has allowed us to remain and occupy these facilities under a lease agreement, but we have to be out of there by October 2007. In negotiating with Providence Hospital, they are currently in the plans of what to do with the old API, and as part of that, they have agreed that we can occupy a portion of the old API for the step-down facility. So the $2.5 million request is to actually accomplish that whole move. When we looked at completing a standalone facility for that same set of services, we had estimated that could cost $6 to $7 million. So we believe this is a good outcome for the state as far as allowing us a less costly option. So hopefully I haven't confused you, but it has been an interesting historical land deal around this area, Madam Chairman.
Okay, now, but you said just a portion of the old API?
A portion of the old West Wing.
Of the old West Wing.
Just this little portion here is what we're talking about.
And does the remainder of the building remain standing and used for future uses, or is it going to be raised?
My understanding is that Providence is looking at this and evaluating it. When we looked at the asbestos abatement alone for the state to do, the asbestos abatement, it was going to be upwards of $15 million. They believe they can do it cheaper, but they're actually going to tear everything out down to the walls. And this particular building survived the 64 earthquake, so there's concern, you know, they'll have to look at, you know, what's behind the walls when they actually do that total. Okay. So, but I think their current plans are to try to rebuild it with the shell that they'll have.
Okay. Thank you. Are there other questions? Thank you. Oh, Senator Olson.
Just one question, and thanks for bringing the picture. Sure, not nice to look at a picture as opposed to looking at paper or writing all day long. What's the name of the street there, just so I orient myself?
36.
That's 36.
That's 36 over here. And then Providence Hospital, I'm sorry, is located off the, over here, basically, to the, this is northeast, so Providence Hospital is located to the east, and UAA is across 36. And then, again, McLaughlin Youth Center. If you haven't toured, it's actually a pretty interesting facility for Everett Anchorage.
Okay. Other questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, I brought some more pictures. The next project that you have on your list is a request for $500,000 for a project in your back called the Comprehensive Client Database. We commonly call it the Master Client Index System in our department. This request is to develop a comprehensive client database of clients receiving services from the department. You've probably heard Commissioner Gilbertson say that one of his goals that he hopes he's able to achieve in his first term as commissioner is to be able to get an unduplicated count of clients that we serve. We can't do that now. We have very many databases in our department. But they're all standalone systems, and to try to be able to manage clients better, we've embarked on this effort for this master client database, which would actually provide demographic data that we could share, not the individual program data, so that we would know more about our clients. So this just I call this a stick figure diagram, but I guess it's an actor in the IT world. This basically just shows that some of the problems we want to solve with our master client index is to get an accurate count of the clients and services. This is a short-term goal, so we'd like to be able to unduplicate and get an accurate count. Then our longer-term, our midterm vision is to maintain our demographic data across program boundaries. So in other words, we have a lot of clients who use multiple systems, and right now we cannot necessarily tell that if you're in the child protection system, that you're also in our public assistance system, or you're in our juvenile information system, or any of our other systems that we use, our nursing system, if you're a client of ours there. So what we plan to do is we'll actually be maintaining the demographic data in a central place, and that's what this shows. And so if you're a client of Health and Social Services, rather than having the same demographic data of birth, place of birth in all these multiple systems, we're going to keep it in one system, and those programs that have very different needs will access the demographic data from that central point. And this will allow us then to know if our clients are in many multiple systems. The final long-term vision, which is really what we're trying to get to, is that the caseworker in the field who's working with a family oftentimes doesn't know that that family may have received services from us in the past or is currently receiving services from a different program. And so if they have that knowledge, we believe we'll be able to do better case management rather than having multiple case managers working with one family. We'll be able to better organize the way that we deal with that family, and the information will be available so they'll know when they actually are working with a family some of the problems that the family has. So That is ultimately the vision. It's not just about, you know, counting clients.
If that were in place now, the pilot projects you have planned in a couple of places in the state would be 100 times easier.
Madam Chairman, absolutely. Exactly. And that's what we're struggling with now. It's we're really using more manual systems to get information. One other chart, just kind of about the same thing. Just a timeline. I know you're always interested in timelines for the Master Client Index. We started December 15th for the part one, which is application specifications and requirements. Part two will start partway through at part one. We don't have to wait completely for the first segment to be done to start part two. That's our database analysis. That's really looking at all of our top databases and seeing which ones to include, you know, in this whole system. Then we have a part three, which is user interface creation. One of the problems people find is duplicate records, and that really messes up these kinds of systems. So we have to get some protocols in place and look at how we manage duplicate records. And then again, user interface. This is actually being able to use the system as we envisioned. So we're thinking 30 months, although we're not going to come to you to redo current old systems just to meet our new vision for this Master Client Index. So as we replace new systems, they'll have to meet these protocols. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you. Any questions about that? Very good. And for the members, floor schedule has been rescheduled to 11 o'clock. So, go ahead.
All right, Madam Chairman, the next project is another IT project. This is the second year of a request for our e-grant project. It's a request for $100,000 to design and build an automated system for management of all aspects of grant administration. In the packet that we provided this morning, we brought some more pictures.
What number is that, Janet?
That's number 39148. $100,800.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. In the packet that we provided this morning, we did provide another visual to help explain what we're doing with e-grants in the department. It contained this visual model, actually contains three modules. The first one at the top is application development, and the first module is actually in use. This is the basically infrastructure and foundation for e-grants. It's our availability to have live data. It provides our status of payments and advances, status of document tracking, summary of data available. If we would have had more time, Madam Chairman, I was going to provide a demonstration this morning, but I thought it would take a little bit more time. But you should know that if you have an inquiry from a constituent, a grantee who's worried about they haven't received their payment, we have a system in-house that can track where that is, what might be holding it up, if they're late with their quarterly report, or what it might be. So it has been an extremely useful tool for us. We're also using it, Madam Chairman, to track our performance measures for that section of our department and their ability to get timely grant payments out. The second module, the document management, is actually where we interface with grantees, and this is what this particular request will help fund, where we develop a web-based system so that grantees can apply online, can do all their reporting online, they can get access to their information, and they'll know where their grant payments might be in their other status. So this is really moving us out of the paper age into more of the online stage. And then the final module is internal, again, internal compliance, proposal evaluation committee reviews and reports as grant decisions are made. So that's the three modules for them.
Any questions about that? Okay, Janet, next.
The next project, Madam Chairman, is Bethel Youth Facility Security Improvements, item 39875. It's a request for $233,900. To really enhance the Bethel Youth Facility security needs. Our current physical security measures are inadequate. We need to renovate our security
we actually need to establish some security at the Bethel Youth Facility. We really don't have anything, and develop controls to provide a safe working environment. Presently, if you walk into the main entrance to the facility, which remains open during business hours, it enters into a main corridor, which then allows unimpeded access to administration and probation offices. Anyone could enter that. We really need to bring the Bethel Youth Facility up to the other standard of our youth facilities, probably using bulletproof glass, et cetera, and other ways to make it secure, including cameras, et cetera. The next project is Project 39892, $600,000 for the Anchorage Pioneer Home Emergency Generator Replacement. Madam Chairman, we actually have a couple of emergency generators at the Anchorage Pioneer Home. Both of them are very old. One was installed in 1975 and one in 1983. One is in the south building, one is in the north building. The south building generator does not meet code requirements for use as an emergency generator, so it can only be used for non-emergency needs. And the north building generator recently failed a test provided by local building officials, and so we need to actually replace both of the generators. We will do it with one generator that can solve both problems.
Are there questions, Senator Stedman?
I'm just kind of curious on the, Madam Chairman, on generators. They're used intermittently from time to time, and I would expect to see some fairly low hours on these generators, and they don't, even though the dates appear old, 83, an 83 generator that's not used very often isn't a very old generator. I'm just curious as far as the actual need for a replacement versus
an upgrade.
Just an upgrade, sure. Yeah.
Do you have any answer or do you have further information?
Through the Chair, Senator Stedman, we did, through the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, MBA consulting engineers did provide a report to us. I could provide that to the committee as well, and we're just following their recommendation.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chairman, I'd be interested in knowing what the test was that failed. Was it something insignificant like the starter was corroded, or the battery's leads were corroded, or was it something more significant, like the engine was frozen?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, I don't know, but I can find that out.
Would you please?
Will do.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You might also look at paragraph 2 in the project description justification. It talks about water in the fuel and some other things, and that might be part of it. And if Janet can get more information about it, then that would be good.
I'll do that.
Any other questions?
Madam Chairman, the next project is number 40224, the Juno Pioneer Home Roof Replacement. This is a request for $1 million to replace the roof at the Juno Pioneer Home. It's a 32,000 square foot roof, was installed during the original construction of the Juno Home in 1985. It's nearly 20 years old and is failing in numerous locations. In your packet, starting at page 2, we have provided you the report from the USKH Architects that recommends the roof be replaced as soon as possible. And then I think hopefully that you can see on page, starting on page 8 of that handout, again, we did provide a whole series of pictures that, again, based on copying, may not have done justice to the roof problems, but we have 2.5 pages of leaks and problems that have been identified in the roof. Temporary repairs are expensive, and they don't really fix the problem, and so we're asking to replace the whole roof with something that would last longer than that. So I would urge Madam Chairman, the committee, to take a look at the pictures. You can see that the leaks and problems with the roof are really throughout the whole roof, even as we've tried to replace it.
The question, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. How old is this roof?
20 years old.
Any other questions? Okay. Next item?
The next project is number 31862. It's a request for deferred maintenance, renovation, repair, and equipment for $1.7 million. This is a request for projects that are not Pioneer Home projects. That is a separate request. This is for deferred maintenance projects for 28 health centers, youth facilities, and other behavioral health facilities statewide. In the backup that you have, we have provided, it's my page 16, but it's the second page after the initial description, we have provided a list of all of the deferred maintenance projects in priority order. We do a prioritization based on health, life, safety, age, condition of the building, and we try to do a building condition audit every couple of years. So this particular list, we would be able to go down and fund item 13 on our list of $7.7 million. So, Madam Chairman, you know it doesn't always go that far. We also, in the same additional handout, starting on page 11, have provided some pictures, again, of some of the problems of some of our top priority projects, so I'll just spend a little bit of time on those. Our first deferred maintenance project is our Bethel Youth Facility window replacement. There are several windows in the facility that leak due to various reasons. We need to investigate the source of leaks in these windows and prepare bid documents for the repair. The second priority is also in the Bethel Youth Facility wall and floor replacement. They've had some damage as well as just age, particularly inside the detention cells, and that's clearly one area we need to be on top of. Priority three is a project for our Fairbanks Youth Facility, which would replace our existing controls, are really obsolete and difficult to maintain. We'd like to replace them with the direct digital control. This will allow for a more fully automated system. That's on page 13 of your handout. And then on page 14, we've shown some problems that we have in our Sitka Health Center. We've had a long-standing issue of public access problems, needing to do safety remodels. The entry landing has deteriorated and needs repair to prevent tripping hazards. We've actually had we've had some people actually trip going into this facility, and this is a public health nurse center, and we do have elderly and other individuals going into that quite often. We also have a problem with the entry door is very deteriorated, and we've got leaks and other problems with when we have bad weather conditions in that facility. And then on page
Janet, yes. On the door, is anything else being structurally changed to change the to shield from weather or anything? Because the exact same thing is going to happen the next, you're going to start immediately with that if nothing is changed to prevent the weather from hitting the door. Do you know if there's any redesign or?
Madam Chairman, I believe there is, but I don't have that information.
Okay, if you could let us know. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I just know that that facility's had some problems.
Okay, thanks.
And then the page 15, our priority 7, the assets building, pipe replacement. The assets is actually a state building in Anchorage that we lease to a grantee, but it nonetheless is a state building, and we're obligated to be the landlord. The reason that it's a state building is I believe that a prior grantee dissolved and the facility came back into state hands. But nonetheless, in that building, we have a pipe condition analysis was performed, and the hot water supply and recirculation lines were found to be near failure, so we need to go in and fix that problem. The next request, Madam Chairman, if I can continue, is Project 37934. This is Pioneer Homes Deferred Maintenance, Renovation, Repair, and Equipment. And again, we're asking for $2.5 million for Pioneer Homes Deferred Maintenance and Repair. Again, right behind the front page, we've given you a list of prioritized projects for all the Pioneer Homes. And for them, if this appropriation is funded, we can go to project number 20 on the list. and you can see a variety of projects. We also, in the handout you got this morning, starting on page 17, have given, provided some pictures of some of the projects that are on our top priority. We, on page 17, have a couple of projects related to the Ketchikan Pioneer Home, exterior paint and repair, and the Ketchikan Pioneer Home controls replacement. And we've provided some additional information there to explain those. On page 18 of the handout from this morning, we have some work that needs to be done at the Fairbanks Pioneer Home, the exterior paint and a parking lot draining problem we have that we need to fix the storm drain and also fix some of the exterior work on the Fairbanks Pioneer Home. And then on page 19, probably one of the worst pictures I've seen in a long time, is for the Juno Pioneer Home, we have glazing repairs that we have to do in the facility, and then our priority 8, the Juno Pioneer Home duct cleaning, which is frankly, Madam Chair, just gross, and we need to really clean those ducts because we have people living in those facilities 24 hours a day, and the air quality, et cetera, certainly would put us at some individuals at some risk, particularly for elderly senior pioneers. And then the last...
I thought I'd follow up on Senator Olson's earlier question. That looks like it has to be an ongoing. I mean, you'd never stop cleaning that, though, if you're going to prevent this from happening. And do you know if in the Pioneer Home systems there is a mechanism or a plan to do that sort of work regularly, or is it above and beyond?
Madam Chairman, we've, as you know, we've recently inherited the Pioneer Homes in the last 2 years, and we're certainly learning more about them. We are trying to get all the pioneers on a preventive maintenance schedule and to also bring them into using a centralized management maintenance system so that we can get these things more on a routine basis with our maintenance personnel. So it's our intention to try to stay on top of it.
Thank you.
And then the last picture is from the Sitka Pioneer Home kitchen finishes replacement. This is one of our oldest facilities, and some parts of the kitchen include the original construction from 1933. And so we have some work to do to make sure that that kitchen is safe and usable. And again, Madam Chairman, these are just representative projects. We could tell you about any one of those, but I thought this would give you a good overview for everything.
Thank you.
The next project is number 33797. It is a request for $425,000 for the emergency medical services, ambulances, and equipment statewide. This is a match for the Code Blue project. This provides life-saving services, EMS, ambulances, and first responder personnel, equipment, et cetera, for all of the volunteer agencies throughout the state. We actually provide the match that they need for the U.S. Department of Agriculture and other, the Rasmussen Foundation and the Denali Commission for the Code Blue project. We have funded ambulances, any type of transport vehicle, oxygen systems, even some snow machines in some areas that they're needed for certain clinics are also part of the request.
So we're matching USDA, Rasmussen, and Denali Commission funds?
That's
in order
correct.
To receive that money?
That's correct. There is a match.
Any questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Where in particular are these purchases being placed?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I understand that the Code Blue Steering Committee is going to meet March 23rd and 24th. I think by then they'll have all the applications, and we'll be able to give you some more detailed information about that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Janet, is the match a soft match or a required match?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, it is a required match for the USDA portion of the funding.
Okay, and that is how much?
I believe it's 75%. They provide 75% of the funding, and this matches at 25%.
They're providing 75% of what?
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman.
And USDA is providing 75% of the total 425, or a lesser amount?
Madam Chairman, no. This 425, those USDA funds don't flow through the state system. So the 425 leverages three times that, if that makes sense.
1.2 million.
Yes.
Well, so how much is the hard match, and how much is the required or the hard match, and how much is the soft match?
Senator Wilkin, I don't have that information, so I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
The next project is Project 39872, $325,000 for our Juvenile Offender Management Information System, our JOMIS system. The Juvenile Offender Management Information System was actually funded and established with federal funds, primarily with an earmark from Senator Stevens. The state has not had to invest very much money in that whole system. It's now become apparent that to continue the reforms that we've started in the juvenile system, that we need to do some changes to that particular system to allow us to incorporate new and existing business rules. Jerry Bailey is a program officer, and I believe he's in Anchorage and can testify in more detail about what they will actually use this money for and what it will do for our system.
In fact, thank you for mentioning that. You just, Gerald Bailey, I understand you're online waiting to testify.
I am, Madam Chair.
Would you go ahead and introduce yourself and begin your testimony, please?
For the record, I'm Gerald Bailey. Basically, the Juvenile Offender Management Information System has been online now for about 3 years, and we knew at the time that we brought the system online that over time we would need to make changes and improvements to it, and we also knew at the time that when we first brought it online, we would not be able to think of everything that we needed in the system. Through using the system, we have become very familiar with it. It has served us very well, but there are things that we can definitely do to improve it, to improve the quality of the data that we put into the system, and therefore improve the quality of the data that comes back out that assists us in making data-driven decisions. There are a number of initiatives within the Division of Juvenile Justice that are based on the information in JOMIS, things like the Detention Assessment Instrument, the Youth Level Service Instrument, the Performance-Based Standards. These are all based on information that we gather and use to make decisions for the operation management of the division. This particular capital request is to allow us to improve the quality of the data going into the system, and also to add additional functionality in terms of reports that the managers can draw back from the system, and also some basic maintenance and data integrity issues within the system. That's a quick overview. If there are any additional questions.
Janet, I'm kind of curious about the description on data edits that incorporate new and existing business rules. What does that mean?
Gerald, can you talk about the new business rules that you might incorporate?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Basically, what we're talking about there is the way data is entered into JOMIS. When it gets placed into a facility, we have a couple different fields that need to be filled out. One is of course, what facility they're in. Another one is the admission type, and another one is the contributing charge. One of the things that we want to make sure is that when a person gets admitted to a facility, say on a probation violation, that the contributing charge matches that. It is, in fact, a probation violation, not a new criminal charge, and vice versa. So these are just internal business rules that have to do with how data should be entered into the system. Some other some other data roles are not putting in future dates or for an end date. We have different date fields within the system. Some are there designed to pick up the start date, some are designed to pick up the anticipated end date, and some are designed to record the actual end date. Again, a lot of these are just little technical issues that need to be dealt with to make the data more accurate and reduce the likelihood of a user making a data input error.
So, Madam Chairman, a business rule might be that if there's a certain charge for a juvenile, there can only be certain types that would be accepted by the system, rather than something that somebody might enter incorrectly, because then you get incorrect data. So that would be a business rule.
We might want to sit down and talk about this. I'm a little lost here. Con?
Thank you. I'm just wondering what youth skills inventory consists of, and then what are the performance-based standards? What does that mean? Are they better cooks or what?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, the Division of Juvenile Justice has quietly been reforming its system, and they did it first with their detention facilities by, and some of these terms indeed are confusing, by establishing a objective instrument that when a juvenile is presented to a facility, they kind of run through this objective standards, and if it meets a certain score, then the juvenile is actually put into the detention facility. It used to be that the probation officers kind of collectively with their judgment made that decision. So they're using a more objective measure of when a youth is taken into custody in a detention facility. What they're talking about with the other instrument is using a well-tested model that's been in other states for their probation system as well, so that when there's an offense and it's referred to the juvenile justice system, a probation officer will actually do an assessment up front of that youth and that individual. They're really trying to move more information and more resources to the front end of the lower cost part of our system rather than where it used to be, where kids were just detained in facilities and we had, as you remember, huge overcrowding and a lot of problems. And so what they're trying to do is use the system that they have, this JOMA system, to support all those decision-making parts of their system. So I don't know if that's helped explain it. The Director Patty Ware is much more eloquent. She happens to be out of town. All right, could certainly bring her.
Is she going to be back down here?
Oh, yes.
Maybe she could come by and talk to some of the senators, because I think this particular presentation is a little confusing. That would be something to follow up on, because I know this is important to you, but we need to be sure that everybody understands what it is, okay?
Yes. Okay, thanks.
Would that help, Senator Bundy, if Patty Ware dropped in? Okay, thanks.
Madam Chairman, the next item is another IT project. It's number 40018. It's for $300,000 for server consolidation. In FY05, in July, we consolidated all of our IT functions into one organization in the department. Up until that time, we'd had a very decentralized organization, and IT services were independently managed in each division and program. Since July, we've been working on projects to improve our IT services, and one of them has been looking at standardizing our server operations and looking at how we can better manage our servers. We have 300 servers, mm-hmm. which is a lot even for our department. And what this money will do, this will allow us to basically our servers now serve both as kind of operating systems as well as disk storage. This way it's been described to me as the ability to store a lot of information on those servers. What we'd like to do is to invest in a storage area network and take that information that's being stored in servers and really develop a disk storage unit so we can store information separately from the servers that need to manage it. That way we can purchase less costly servers. We think eventually we're going to be able to consolidate 100 of our 300 servers and get down to 200. That has benefits throughout the department because you don't need to manage so many servers, you don't need to have so many IT people to touch them or work on them all the time. And we also think that as we need to replace some of these older servers, we can do it with a less costly model.
Other questions? Thank you. Next item.
The next request, Madam Chairman, is for $600,000 in federal receipts for the Women, Infant, and Children Payment System, the WIC system. I need to correct some of the backup information. This $600,000 would not replace the system. This would help us develop requirements analysis and design for a replacement system. So once we develop the requirements analysis, we will have to come back to the legislature for a replacement system. Currently, the system is out of federal compliance. Our WIC program is primarily federally funded, and obviously the federal government has already approved the expenditure of this $600,000 for the requirement analysis. Our current system that was developed has actually a separate server and system in each one of our 30 grantee sites, which is very cumbersome. It's caused all kinds of problems with duplicate warrants, and we need to really streamline the system and get a better system for the WIC system. We have not done the requirements analysis or the design. We have to do that first before we would come back. And we also need to get approval for the federal government to authorize the funding of that particular part of the project. So this is the first step to replace our WIC system.
Okay, well, would it be thought that the federal government would help assist in paying for the eventual replacement system?
Madam Chairman, typically the WIC program does pay 100% of our system replacements, but we still have to do the work to get them to do that.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Okay.
Another project, Madam Chairman, is Project 39983. This is from the mental health bill, but it's for the Alaska Psychiatric Institute Automation Project. It's for $674,200. This would develop an automated medical records and finance management system for API, which is our only hospital, which has to meet hospital standards. We believe that once we develop this medical record system, we can actually bring in more federal revenue, particularly from the Medicare system. So if you go through the backup that we provided, we have a study that tells us that if we have the system up and running, we could earn $180,000 in additional revenue per year. So the payoff for doing this is relatively quick. We also think that we could save on administrative costs of having a medical record system rather than a manual system that our psychiatrists are required to keep right now. So we're looking for automation just like other hospitals are.
Senator Wilkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Janet, I know that when I see account 2000, that's the Amarada Hess bond fund proceeds. When I see 2001, is that Amarada Hess but just directed to mental health?
Through the Chair, Sam Wilkin, yes, that's what my understanding.
Okay, so 2001 also means Amarada Hess proceeds.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
The next project is Project 37694, Telephone Systems Replacement, $209,600. We have various phone systems in our independent offices that are not on either the state networks in Juneau, Anchorage, or Fairbanks. Primarily in health centers, youth facilities, public assistance offices, and in pioneer homes. We've been working with Department of Administration to develop the standard for what we should use to replace these phone systems. And as you know, no phone systems were replaced for many years when the ACS partnering agreement was in place. And so we have some systems that are failing, calls are being dropped, people aren't able to access the information. We get complaints when folks are trying to call either youth facilities or health centers and can't get through, and we do need to replace these phone systems.
Thank you.
The next project is
our Alaska Psychiatric Institute move. Madam Chairman, we are, as I kept my map up here, my aerial photo, we are moving next door from the old API to the new API, and that's going to take place in July of this year, and we're certainly planning that now. However, even though we're just next door, it is going to cost us to move patients safely and all the furnishings and everything else from the old API over a very tight schedule to the new API. We do not want patients to be to have problems or regress or any of that that thing. So we'll be hiring a contractor to help do the move. We'll have to move some medical records, also any of our things that we'll have in stock. We're obviously planning to try to reduce our stock of food on site and everything else in the changeover, but nonetheless there are some costs for actually making that move that we just can't avoid. Further questions? Thank you. The next project is number 40043, Senior Centers Deferred Maintenance, Construction, Renovation, Expansion, and Equipment. This is $2 million, $1 million of bond funds and $1 million of federal funds. 2 years ago, the Commission on Aging completed a needs assessment of all the senior centers of maintenance needs that they had in their facilities. The list totals, I think, about $5 million, $5.7 million. We would be, with these funds, Madam Chairman, we would be going out for competitive procurement for all the senior centers to again apply, because obviously things have changed in the last 2 years. But if the committee is interested, we could provide the long list of issues and problems in all the senior centers throughout the state and the maintenance issues that they've had.
And is this a required match?
Madam Chair, no, it is not a required match. Next item.
Oh, good. Excuse me, are we talking about 40043?
We are, yes.
Oh. It says state match required.
I don't believe a state match is required. We actually have applied for some, in other words, Senator Wilken, I think we've applied for federal funds. We don't know if the match funds will be required, but at this point, it's not like one of our regular programs where we know it's a state match.
Oh, okay, so then there is no state match required, or we don't know?
We don't know.
Okay, thank you.
The next project, Madam Chairman, is Denali Commission Grants for Healthcare Facility Improvements. This is a project in our department's budget for the last couple of years. The Denali Commission requested that we increase the dollar amount to $25 million. Based on information that they had from the federal agencies, that there'll be additional health facilities. We use this for health facilities, village clinics, assisted living homes, and other health-related facilities. They go through the Denali Commission process, and then we manage the grants on behalf of the Denali Commission. And they pay for one of our grant administrators to do that.
Other questions? Next item.
All right. The next item, we're getting into the mental health bill. And Madam Chairman, most of these projects have been in the mental health bill for years, since 1998. So I could go through them individually, but again, they're projects that the Mental Health Trust Authority has requested in their request to the legislature and the governor. In some cases, there is a request for state match for these projects, but most of these projects are competitively procured to the beneficiary grantees, and they have to competitively seek the funds that are out there. And we manage these on behalf of the Mental Health Trust Authority.
So these could go forward without any general fund match?
Madam Chairman, at times when the legislature's done that, the Mental Health Trust Authority has pulled back their funding. They believe that they need to have some state match in them. So
Madam Chairman, that would cover the mental health deferred maintenance and accessibility improvements, the essential program, equipment for $575,000, home modifications for $300,000, and the transitional housing for substance abuse for $100,000. The next project, the Fairbanks detoxification unit construction expansion renovation, the $1 million in federal authority, again, there isn't a source for that. However, the we have had some consultation with the Denali Commission. They've recently awarded federal funds to the trust authority itself. We may have to move these funds to the trust authority budget itself if so we might need some consultation on that particular item. Then the last three on that list, group home development, therapeutic foster home, those are particularly important for our Bring the Kids Home initiative. This would help us invest in additional group homes and also some therapeutic foster homes, which are the lower end of the system. And then the last one is emergency assistance for $200,000. I could go individually through these, but again, most of them are routine requests that you've seen in the past from the Mental Health Trust Authority. And I believe they've also done presentations on their capital budget.
Are there any questions about any of these items?
Thank you, Janet. I imagine some people might have questions for you that they'll be getting back to you, and
okay.
Certainly my office might. So, is the Department of Labor?
Good morning. Guy Bell, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The department has three projects in the governor's capital budget, and then there's there's a project in the governor's amended budget. Would you like me to cover that as well?
That'd be fine.
Okay. Our first project is for the Alaska Vocational Technical Center, and it's under the title Alaska Vocational Technical Center Deferred Maintenance for $2.5 million. The AVTEC has 11 older buildings ranging in age from 20 to 50 years. Issues that need to be addressed from exterior walls and windows, roofing projects, mechanical projects, electrical upgrades, flooring, egress, safety issues. And we have a number of projects on our list, and this will addresses the highest priority projects for next year. We can provide a detailed list if you like.
That might be a good idea, actually.
Sure.
Thank you.
We'll do that.
Thank you. Are there any questions about 39929? Okay, next item.
Okay. The second item is a $300,000 project for the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation under the title Vocational Rehabilitation Home Modifications and Assistive Technology for Individuals with Disabilities. This funding is to be used for home modifications and vehicle modifications for individuals with significant disabilities who need specialized assistance and technology to enable them to work. So the ultimate objective is to employ individuals, but assistance is provided for such modifications as ramps, wheelchair ramps, bathroom modifications, barrier removal, speech-controlled computers, and vehicle modifications, including lift systems and accessibility. And these are all intended to enable people to go to work.
Next item.
The third item is for the Alaska Vocational Technical Center, and it is to it's for the Alaska Vocational Technical Center welding program expansion. We operate a welding program at AVTEC in Seward. We have a capacity of 14 students per class. There's a demand for more welders in this state. This would allow us to construct a 10,000 square foot welding facility and add 42 additional welders to our workforce per year. And it would be, as I say, a 10,000 square foot training facility, and it would fund the construction as well as the equipment. And we see this as a significant initiative to expand our ability to train welders and for future projects, including, of course, gas pipeline-related activity. And the request is for $3 million.
And that's through student loan?
ASLC? Just, Madam Chair, the funding source is identified as student loan corporation bond proceeds.
What are the other types of projects that could be funded with this?
Madam Chair, I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding is that it's used as a funding source in the budget, and I'm not an expert on the restrictions, but...
Okay. All right. I'll find out. Thank you. Okay. And the amendment?
The amended project is for the Division of Workers' Compensation, and it's a $1,094,000 project to make improvements to our existing workers' comp computer system and to improve our capability for electronic data interchange. Our system is a number of years old. It needs to need some significant improvements and modifications just to make it fully functional. It's losing some of its functionality. And we're also embarking on an initiative to improve electronic filings. And I'll just try to give you some examples of what we're trying to achieve through electronic filing. We intend to reduce the amount of time required to process first reports of interviews from 14 days to 1 day, to reduce the subsequent reports of injury filings from 21 to 30 days to 1 day, and to reduce, ultimately reduce penalties and interest associated with late filings, because through electronic filing, it'll be employers will be able to input data and report data more timely, reducing the impact of potential penalties for late filings. So we
questions about that amended request? Thank you, Guy.
Thank you very much.
Department of Law.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Nordstrand, and I'm the Acting Attorney General. I'm here with our Administrative Services Director, Catherine Dotti. We have two items to discuss with you. I will discuss, and I'll be happy to answer questions about the other, but I'm here to talk to you about the Management Information System request. I think I may have even spoken with some of you already about that need in the department. I've been learning a little bit more about the computer issues that are facing other departments. And I have to say, we have a slightly different situation here, and that is we're not looking on fixing a system we have so much as having a system in the first place. There are three functions that we're looking to add to the Department of Law, particularly the Civil Division, and that's first of all, timekeeping and billing. We do have a timekeeping system right now called Javelin. It's very difficult to use. It doesn't have the functionality that I think we need as a management tool to actually get useful information about what our people are doing, when they're doing it, how they're doing it, and I can talk more about that. But the most important thing is we don't have any case management capability. We can do a bill, we can send a bill to an agency and tell them what we did that month, but we don't have case management technology that would allow us to, for example, pull up on a single screen information about a pending matter or case, find out, be able to pull up documents for that case in that screen, whether it be a complaint, it might be a deposition, it might be notes. We don't even have the capability of doing calendaring by case. If you can imagine, our China caseload, as you know, is dramatic. All of these attorneys working as trial attorneys in China cases, they have 100 to 150 cases. We don't have the capability to say the deadlines in your cases are this, and pull it up and say, here, it's due that day, or this brief is due that day, and follow along. And for example, if someone is sick or quits or whatever, the way that they've been keeping their calendar could be in a paper calendar, it could be in our electronic system. So basically, we don't have the simple management tools that virtually all law firms have. And the Civil Division is the largest civil law firm, in a sense, though a state agency in the state. We have 135 lawyers in the Civil Division, 95 in the Criminal Division. And so this will allow us to bring all this information together and you know, do other simple things like conflict checking. So we might have a case where maybe there's a deadbeat dad who's not, you know, not paying child support in one part of the department, and in another part of the department he's suing the state in a tort case. We have no way of knowing that now. And, you know, the funny part of this, I think, or maybe not so funny, is that if we were a private firm and were to try to seek medical or get malpractice insurance, we couldn't. You know, without these kinds of capabilities, we wouldn't be eligible. We're uninsurable. And so I want to move this forward. Now, the number we've given here is for $1 million. That's an estimate based upon, you know, a price for, you know, off-the-shelf kind of software. We're not going to reinvent the wheel here. There are lots of big law firms and AG's offices that have done this before, and we would be going to, you know, standard kind of software. But we will have to spend some money and are in the process of preparing to get a consultant who can help us design a system, talk about what kind of software we'd like, and then we would bid that out. And the estimate we have is about $1 million to do that. The one other element of this that's important is, so we have timekeeping and billing, case management, and then there's document management. That's the third part of this. The criminal division has a case management system that they use to manage information, but they don't have a document management system either, and this would be for both divisions. Document management is really when we prepare any pleading, memorandum, letter, it's a way of keeping documents, you know, in a method where you can find it and use it later. And right now, if someone drafts an answer to a complaint in a tort case and they, you know, the attorney saves it, they can call it anything they want, put it anywhere they want, and we will never be able to find it again, perhaps, if that attorney isn't around to tell us. This will solve that problem. So every time you save a document, you'll have to be the name of the person who did it, the date, some information about it. It'll be put in a place that relates to a particular case and will connect directly into this case management system. So we'll be able to find the documents again. And let me just leave you with this, that the most important aspect of all of this to me is using our own work product over. Being able to take the intellectual capital that we have in the department and use it again. One of the ways we're doing that, we've implemented a system called WestKM, short for knowledge management. But what it's allowing us to do on a limited basis now is to take documents that we prepare, say some big deal appellate brief, and we put it in a server, in a specific place on a server, and Westlaw, which you may know a little bit about, is a sort of a research tool to search through cases and statutes and all that. Westlaw has come in and created a system where our own documents are a Westlaw database. So when I want to search, say, for a case about sovereign immunity in Alaska, I can search Alaska's case law, Alaska's statutes, and our own database at the very same time, and it will pull up documents like that. Now, that's important in the context of this document management system is because we have to have a solid document management system to put the documents into this system. Right now, we bought a few licenses so we could do it, you know, on a sort of an ad hoc basis, but this would allow to automatically put all of our work product, or most of it, in a place where it's usable again. And I have this vision that one day there'll be a China lawyer in Juneau who finishes a brief today that a China lawyer in Bethel can find and use tomorrow. That's what I'm trying to get to. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about this project or...
Are there any questions about that information system?
Scott, if we were, could we phase it and do it half and half? Could you get started with 500,000 and follow it up in 07 with another 500?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I think that it's unlikely because a large part of what we would be purchasing are the licenses for software. In the sense of, for example, you know, the software that we're using now in this sort of demonstration project with WestKM is called ProLaw. It costs so much a seat to buy. It gets installed at one time, essentially. And I think that the large part of that is going to be spent up front at a single time. And the other thing is the installation part, the how much it costs to put it in.
you know, will essentially be spent at one time. Maybe Catherine?
No, I think that's accurate, Senator Wilk, and I think the ongoing costs are very small, and the licensing costs are what we're really talking about here.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next item. Madam Chair, the next item from the Department of Law is another technology difficulty we're facing. Within the Collections and Support Unit of the Civil Division, we have a group of folks that collect financial obligations owed to the state, and we collect thousands of them every year, typically through the garnishment of the PFD. What we're faced with within that database is the inability to expand it and the inability to enhance it so that it can handle electronic downloading of information both from the Permanent Fund Dividend Division and from the court system. We are leaving on the table right now $750,000 in correctional surcharges that the legislature passed last year because our database simply cannot handle another type of collection, and we are required to track those kinds of collections by type. So for an investment of $250,000 in general fund program receipts that the department currently has, we can return threefold to you each year at least the upfront investment for being able to rebuild this database so that it has future opportunities to expand and eliminates the need for double entry on the, by a lot of the administrative staff.
You can imagine, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
If you can imagine, we actually have people taking electronic data from the court system, printing it out, and then keying it in to our system, essentially, because it doesn't connect.
Yeah, I just underscore this. I've been very interested in the restoration of victims, and the system now does not allow, when the Civil Division finds out that they're not receiving collections, if it doesn't allow the court, or the prosecutor, or the judge to know in a timely fashion and apply the remedies.
Are there other questions or statements?
That was all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
DMVA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Kramer. I'm the Admin Service Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Committee, we have 10 projects for you today. The first one I will start with is 34848. It's for a total of $10,562,500. Madam Chair, the Bethel National Guard Readiness Center is currently in the design phase to replace the existing undersized and outdated facility. Construction of a new facility is necessary to meet the minimum requirements established by the National Guard Bureau. National Guard Bureau requires 25% matching funds for construction and 100% state funding for building site work. This project is being funded using a 3-budget cycle program. This request is for the second budget cycle. An additional $687,500 general fund match will be required to complete the construction and will be requested in 07.
Your questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Second item is 38529. This is a $15 million request. It's all federal funding. The state Homeland Security Grant Program is annually awarded by the Office of Domestic Preparedness, U.S. Department of Justice. This request will allow the department to accept 100% federally funded grant allocation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item number three is 39011. It's a $500,000 request. Madam Chair, this project is for the construction of a 1,790-square-foot addition to the second floor, or for the second floor, on the Anchorage Armory. We've ran out of space there, and we've taken on a fairly significant program in the Homeland Security arena, and we just have no space left, so this $500,000 would build that piece.
Questions? Thank you.
Madam Chair, the next item is 40065. This is for $276,900. This project will renovate and upgrade 10,650-square-foot dining facility at the Military Youth Academy, which is located on Fort Richardson. This building was built in 1979, and it truly needs some upgrades. Next item is 40061. This is for $2,500,000. Madam Chair, this project will merge three emergency communication systems into a single operationally integrated concept. This will expand the current EAS system to rural communities using a concept titled Mini Radio Service, modernize the National Alert and Warning System, which is called NAWAS, to 29 statewide locations and provide basic 911 service.
Questions? No. Go right ahead. Thank you.
Madam Chair, the next project is 40060. It's for $8,452,000 in federal receipts. This research project is funded by NASA and FAA. It involves mapping the most dangerous major air corridors in the state and providing ortho-rectified remote imaging and digital elevation models to create 3D visual fly-throughs. We have a recent request, I will add, that is not in the write-up, that Microsoft is hotly pursuing us to try and get their hands on this technology as well.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Next item is 38963. This is for $1 million, $500 in bond funds and $500 in federal funds. We have 237 Alaska National Guard Armory buildings located in 96 various locations throughout the state. The average age of these are 30 years, and this will be for deferred maintenance and renewal and replacement for these facilities.
And is the $500,000 state funds required?
Yes, it is.
Next item.
Next item is 40062. It's $1.5 million in federal receipts. Madam Chair, this project is for construction, addition, and alteration to the existing Readiness Center in Kodiak. The facility was constructed in 1959, and it's 100% federal and just needs some renovations and repairs.
Are there questions? Thank you. Go ahead.
Next item is 32560. This is for $150,000 in federal receipts, federal receipts. This project funds replacement of doors, windows, insulation, and various other things for maintenance and for measures in energy efficient design.
Thank you. Next item.
Madam Chair, the final item is 31915. It's for $100,000 in federal receipts. We have a program which is counter-drug program. This $100,000 is federal receipts to allow them the ability to be able to expend some of those federal dollars for technological support and materials for their ongoing effort for counter-drug.
Thank you. Does that complete your presentation, or do you want to do the amended?
Madam Chair, that completes the presentation. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Do we not have the LMR one?
Excuse me. Madam Chair, I'm sorry. This is an amendment, 40583, for $2,744,000. This project is for the continued construction of the core infrastructure of the Alaska Land Mobile Radio System.
To his federal receipts.
Federal receipts.
Mm-hmm. Are there any questions about that? Thank you, John.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And that will conclude our presentations for today. And we will meet again on Monday morning at 9 a.m. to take public testimony on Senate Bill 141. And do you have any announcements, Senator Wilkin?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
You're adjourned.